turning to your Russian roots for a second, have you found, as a chemist who speaks Russian, which must be pretty unusual in Britain, that this opens doors for you with Russia today?
Yes. I should say straight away, it's not unusual now, because there are lots of Russians working in the West. I have two Russian colleagues in Nottingham alone. But when I started interactions with Russia, which was in the mid-1980s, it was much more unusual to have Russian-speaking chemists working in the West. And I think the reason, at least to begin with, why this was very useful is because my Russian counterparts could speak English quite well when they were talking about lasers or their particular area of research, but they were totally lacking in the vocabulary to carry on the conversation over dinner or a glass of wine. Whereas I was the other way around. I couldn't say anything about chemistry in Russian, but I could chat socially indefinitely. So this was quite a good combination.
But how did you also then spread your wings into another continent, Africa? Because you've also actually had quite a lot of success in some African countries, Ethiopia amongst them.
That was purely due to chance. My son, about 2 years after he graduated in physics, decided he was bored working in industry and that he would go as a volunteer physics teacher to rural Ethiopia. And a year after he went, I and my wife went to visit Ethiopia, to visit Simon, and I gave an impromptu talk on green chemistry. And it was quite interesting that so many people wanted to listen that eventually the doors of the lecture theatre had to be locked. And it's the only time in my life that I've given a lecture with people outside looking in through the windows. Usually when I give a lecture, it's people inside looking out through the windows. The people at the school were very enthusiastic and said we should visit Addis Ababa University and talk to the chemist there. So we went to Addis University a few days later, and we met Dr. Nigis Dasfor, who was coming down the stairs in a great hurry, and Simon spoke to her in fluent Amharic, and she was so amazed that she forgot what she was doing and turned around and showed us around the department. And she and her husband, who's a leading botanist, have become great friends of ours. In fact, her husband, Seb Sebi, has received an honorary degree from Nottingham in 2010, the only African, apart from Nelson Mandela, to ever get an honorary degree from our university.
And do you now continue to work with them?
Well, my younger colleague, Pete Licence, became an adjunct professor in Addis University. One of his students, and now one of my postdocs, have worked as lecturers at Addis University. We're doing joint research with them. And I visit Ethiopia at least once a year at the moment. I'm scheduled to go again in November.
Of course, probably the thing that the average person who has come across you on account of would be your YouTube presence. Tell us about how that happened and what effect it's had on you.
Well, first of all, it's had an enormous effect. But it began because my university started a YouTube channel called Test Tube, which was a collaboration between the university and a video journalist called Brady Harron, who at that time was working part-time for BBC East Midlands Today, the local news station. And after they'd been running for about a year, I heard about them and I got very enthusiastic. And so somewhat naturally, I was asked if I wanted to be videoed. And Brady came to see me in my office and at the end of quite a long day and videoed me for about 2 hours and made, I can't remember whether it was 5 or 8 videos out of what we did.
What did you tell him? What were you videoing on?
Oh, I talked about green chemistry, supercritical fluids, a bit about me, my bad exam results, the fact that drunk shouts, "Hello, Einstein," at me late at night in the centre of Nottingham. And
I mean, that would be on account of the fact you do have the world's most recognisable hairstyle.
I also demonstrated a particular sort of dog toy called the Wiggly Giggly, which has the same shape as methane and I use for teaching the students. But the difference between the Wiggly Giggly and methane is that if you rotate it, it squeaks. And in fact, the supplier of these Wiggly Gigglies got so excited by the YouTube video that he sent me a box of a dozen more. So I now have 13 Wiggly Gigglies in my office.
But do you have a dog?
No, I don't have a dog. But after all of this, Brady had the idea of making one video about each of the 118 elements on the periodic table. And I told him he was mad because how could you talk about, say, element 117, which in those days not even one atom had been observed. He persuaded me that it was worth a try. And I found some money, but the money had to be spent in 6 weeks. So we had to make 120 videos in 6 weeks, 118 elements, but there was an introduction and a trailer. And I drafted in three of my colleagues who were interested in doing experiments, and particularly Pete Licence, but also Steve Liddell, who was an expert on the transuranium elements and also the lanthanides, which was an area where I don't have an enormous amount of knowledge. And because we were in such a rush, I had to make a very arrogant decision. There wasn't time to look anything up. So we just had to go for it and say whatever I could remember about the different elements. But all of this caused a lot of excitement. And after 6 weeks, we thought we'd finished. But the YouTube fans were asking us to keep going and make more videos. And surprisingly, 6 years on, they're still asking us to make more videos. So we keep going, and we had a video uploaded yesterday, which has already been watched by not a huge number of people, but something like 25,000, which is reasonable.
I'd say that's an incredible achievement, Martin. Are they actually watching it for the science, or do you think it's something else as well? Do you think it's your unique personality? Because you do bring a very compelling style to the way that you expound and talk about things, and you make them intrinsically very interesting. So do you think it's a combination of the science and you thereafter? Or do you think that these are just so interested in the science that that's what they're coming for?
Well, I think that they watch because they are interested. They're interested in the science. And I think that part of the success, at least the part that I'm involved in, is the fact that I look like a typical scientist and people expect me to be rather boring. And the fact that I'm quite funny is a very strange contrast. For example, I got an email yesterday saying, "My name is Robin. I'm a 15-year-old boy and I live in the Netherlands. Some persons call it Holland. Because of you and your team from periodic videos, I want to study chemistry." And we get quite a few messages like that.
How do you see the rest of your career playing out? How do you want to finish things up? Where would you like to see it all finish?
I'm now past the official retirement age, and I'm the first professor in my department who has passed the age of 65 under the new legislation, which means you do not need to retire. And so it's quite an experiment. But at the moment, I'm really enjoying what I'm doing, and I think our science is still going really well. So I don't have any immediate plans to retire. But on the other hand, one clearly can't go on forever. My mother had a cousin who gave his last keynote lecture at a conference when he was 98, and worked in the lab till he was 102 and wrote his last paper when he was 104. So he's quite an interesting inspiration.